Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well.
Excellent.
Yes, it's an artistic day.
Isn't it?
Well, every day is an artistic day.
Yes, every day is an artistic day.
We think about art and design every minute of every day of our lives.
Sure, we do.
We do. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it's in our nature, and
like
it's also...
what color will I wear today?
Yeah. What kind of underwear am I
Although,
putting on?
Note to self. If you wear the dress pants, and there's the slippy kind, it's hard to ride your bike.
Note to self.
Yes. So
yeah. I also know that...
kind of a design flaw.
Yeah. I also know that don't wear earrings that are shaped like fishing lures. They hurt when you're riding your bike.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. There's That's lots funny. Of details I'm learning about how to design one's wardrobe while you're riding your bike to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But anyway, that's a whole different show.
But it's all part of, curating your life experience.
Yeah.
So today we thought we would talk a little bit about not so much what happens in the community. Well, there's a link to that, but what happens in your home.
Yes.
Yes.
It's about personal art.
Yes.
Yeah. And we go...
why you should have it, and if you should have it, and where you should put it, and how you should
how
put
you
it
should
up.
Put it up. And all that stuff. Art for your home.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about design versus decoration in a community-wide sort of, concept, and then workspace related and things like that all the time. Mm-hmm. It's so important to be well-designed because of functionality, efficiency, happiness, freedom of thought, all those things. Mm-hmm. But those same principles apply to your home.
Yes.
Your personal space.
Yes.
You have to not just keep adding in order to decorate. You have to design.
Right.
And art is no different. You can't have this massive art collection of stuff and put it all up so everybody can see it in a willy-nilly way and feel happy and comfortable
there,
with
ta-da!
It.
Yeah. No, that's not how it works.
There's ways you feel happy and comfortable with your collection, and we'll talk about that.
So decorating in the absence of design is clutter.
Yes.
Right? Whereas decorating once a space is designed is lovely.
Yeah. There you go.
It's meaningful. It brings you joy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there. We're done. We don't even need to have a show.
Thanks for tuning in. Okay. Now we're going to play charades.
Okay.
But it's an interesting, what does your home look like? Your home is your canvas. It does say a great deal about you. And we've talked about this before, like the winner's effect. Sorry, I'm picking on. I don't mean to pick on that, but the big box art effect.
Yeah.
Or even IKEA. I love IKEA, but if we all have the same prints from the same places, our houses look like their showrooms rather than their own showrooms.
That's
so
right.
Make it your own showroom.
Exactly.
And how do you do that? Like art is actually a very, I like to call it money you hang on your wall, but.
Yeah. Well, like this guy, so there's this interesting article Noah Davis wrote in January, and it's basically all the steps for how to start an art collection.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to talk about today for the first little while. But he talks about art is the one way you can, one of the things you can invest in that you basically just can put on your wall and enjoy while it's appreciating.
Unless you want to put your stock market certificates on the wall, but they're not nearly as lovely
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of an interesting way of looking at it. You're just watching it appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
This is cool.
While you appreciate it.
Yes.
Ba-doom, boom.
Nice connection there. So, okay. The number one thing about starting your own art collection is buying art that you love.
You have to love it.
You have to love it. Mm-hmm. You have to be in love with it. You have to not be able to not think about it. You know, when you see it and then you walk away and you keep thinking about it and you go, oh, I want to go back and look. If it's like that, then it's for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, you say, oh, that artist, I've seen them, go from this price to that price.
Yeah, it can't be cerebral.
No, it can't be. You can't do this purely for investment purposes. Mm-hmm. You have to do it with love and appreciation and joy, or else it's not fun.
Yeah, although some people do it purely for investment
purposes, they do.
But it kind of takes the joy out of it.
Well, and that's a different ball game, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's when people start buying a Gerhard Richter at $500,000.
Yes, that's way, 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 way up at the top of the scale.
Like, and then knowing it's going to be worth $1 million in 3 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good investment return, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're not willing to go and play all these big, big games of big dealing art, then where are you supposed to start, right? So, just try not to think about that investment quality at this point in time. The investment is in yourself and how much you enjoy your space that you create for yourself.
And how much meaning it brings. And
yeah. And then, okay, so here's an interesting thing. So there is always exceptions, but here's a massive exception. So there's an artist, Jacob Casse, who makes these photo mirror canvases. And basically it's such a highly reflective paint that when you as a viewer are looking at it, you're seeing yourself.
So you're part of the painting.
Yeah. So you're getting this blurry painterly image of yourself, which is pretty cool.
What's not to love?
Yeah. Wow. So his paintings were selling at a New York gallery for $4,000. And then 9 months later, one of those paintings sold at auctions for $150,000.
Holy moly.
So just so that you know, that is a 3,650% return on investment inside of a year.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty significant.
Beat that stock exchange.
Yeah. Right? However, but that's not the norm.
That's not why, but you can't buy it for those
You
reasons.
Can't buy it for those reasons. You never know. Nobody's got a crystal ball, right? However, like, it's pretty standard, if you can imagine, that art appreciates on the average of 2.5% a year. Across the board, on average. So it's not bad.
I think that's you can't consume it, right? We talked about this a long time ago. It's not like a sandwich. It doesn't go away. It's always there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It can't be consumed. It can be moved and traded and bought and sold, but you can't do anything with it.
Right.
It doesn't deteriorate.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to our next step, though, in terms of buying. You want to buy quality art.
Yes.
It's true that there's a lot of really fantastic contemporary works out there made to fade, right? It's made to decompose, made to disintegrate, made to rust, made to something, right? And so you kind of have to look at those pieces like, okay, is this important for me to experience and love for the next 20 years?
Yes.
Or is this something I want to pass to my grandchildren that will last a couple hundred years?
Right.
So think about that in terms of long-term investment.
That's why the framing piece is so important.
It is. You're looking at protection.
Totally.
You're looking at protecting from sunlight, right? Like UV protection.
Certain kinds of paper, like
archival paper.
Hire a trained professional.
Yeah. And there's, like, because we know that there's acid-free paper that doesn't disintegrate as fast as paper that has acid in it. So you want to, you know, look at it, make sure it's made with archival materials. Yeah, there's things like that that you can make a decision on. But a lot of, like, I don't know, if you're only interested in enjoying something for the next 20 years, then what the heck, right? Maybe it's something that can be made out of newspaper and you're happy with it.
Sure.
If it brings you joy and it crumbles
In 30 years, oh well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
I enjoyed you while you were here.
But I mean, there's...
Your couch is the same, right? Like, it's not like your couch is going to last you 50 years, so...
But we're always telling people, save for your retirement. Save, you know, RSPs, RESPs, you know, mad money, emergency money. Do all of those things, and that's important. But I would suggest, even if once a year, just once a year, you bought one original piece. And I'm not talking tens of thousands. You know, tens of tens.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Maybe it's $25. Maybe it's $50.
Yeah. You can start really small.
It can be 120. Most of the pieces I have are under 500.
Yeah. And that's...
And I'd venture to guess most of them... The bigger ones, anyway, are more than that now.
Yes, I would guess that. Yeah, because I know a couple of your pieces.
Yes. So.
That's the next step. The next step is to come to know your emerging artists. There's ways to discover who is at the beginning of their game and who is going to actually go somewhere. It does involve research. You do have to do your own research. I mean, lots of places will say, oh, you can use art advisors and pay $300 an hour to get somebody to research for you, but come on.
Oh, come on. No, you have to do it yourself.
This is the fun part, actually.
It's the best part of all.
Yeah.
Getting to know your local artists.
Yeah. And you can't just Google them.
No.
Just putting that out there. Googling an artist to find out if they're worth anything
like
is not
else.
The
they're
way.
They're going to tell you the best story they know how.
Yeah.
And they're going to do their best to control the message.
Yeah.
Hi, get a load of me. I'm awesome. right?
I don't know very many artists who do that.
No,
but yeah.
But when they do, I'm sure there are some.
Yes, it's absolutely true. Yeah. And that some artists actually only do, like, they'll do one really great painting and then do 10,000 prints of that painting, saying that it's got value and it'll increase in value. That's nonsense. Like, that doesn't happen. Original art is where it's at.
It's true.
Stick with the original.
Yes.
So.
And so there are only certain places you can find original art.
Yes.
You can't buy it at a big box store.
Nope.
You don't normally see it on Kijiji, you know? So you got to remember the source. Most of the pieces I have, I've bought either at an auction, like a fundraiser auction, or through the gallery.
Yeah.
And I know, I have no doubt that they're the real thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, anything you buy from Sam and Armark Gallery is a real thing, because this gallery does not show prints of any kind, right? Like, no copies. G clays and things like that are considered just copies, or just fancy photocopies. So you just have to know the place, know their policies about what they show and what they represent. A private gallery, you know, the commercial galleries would be another place you can just build a relationship with, and you just go visit. You don't have to buy something every time you walk through someone's door.
No, it's a showroom.
Yeah.
You're sort of exploring.
Exactly. Yes. So go personally exploring with your feet to different galleries, public and private, and go out to a little bit further afield. Go to some of the little galleries in some small towns, and there's lots of little artist collectives that prop up here and there, and just spend the time with your feet.
Vernon, Kamloops, Kelowna.
Yeah. So that's the best research. Visit your galleries.
Yes.
Yeah.
And attend events.
Yeah.
Visit shows and...
Yeah, there's all kinds of events, like, you know, a winery will have an event where they invite an artist to show work and things like that. There's all kinds of opportunities. Mm-hmm. Artists usually are pretty, they're suckers for exposure.
Yes.
So if somebody says, well, we'll let you show your
really
work. And yeah.
Terrible.
I know. It is kind of terrible, but that's how those artists end up in some of those situations.
Yes.
Most of those situations end up being kind of fruitless. Mm-hmm. You got the exposure, but it doesn't lead anywhere. But every once in a while, one of those things will lead somewhere.
Right.
So that's why artists are still willing to do that.
But start at the bottom of the escalator. Don't feel like you... saying I'm gonna have an art collection means you have to start like at the
you don't have to
six blow. Figure not at all
yeah.
You know, like when I was little, my mom would buy me a modest piece of art for every Christmas, either a painting or a piece of pottery, or and she said, when you're grown up, then you'll have a collection.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's great, and most of them are still in her house, but it is a collection, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If you commit to doing this over the course of a few years, it's not a huge amount each year.
No.
But after a few years, you definitely have something.
Yes.
And it's something very personal to you. So.
As opposed to, you know, another outfit or a sweater or your headphones or all of that stuff. So it's about making a decision to buy something that holds and gains value, that is also beautiful and brings you joy.
Yes. I think it's the easiest decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
I've purchased so many works over the years because of gallery events. Like when we do the small works.
Yes.
We had two figures show for a few years. The Affordable Art Fair.
Yes, that's where I got most of mine.
Yeah, and the Gems of the She Swap, the 5x7 show where everything was $75. I have probably, I'll bet you I have 30 works from those events over the last 15 years. So, and my kids too. My kids have started their own collections, but being able to buy little things like that too.
Wonderful.
So it can
be like a piece of a pottery.
Yeah.
You know, like at the Mother's Day Fair at Caravan, my kids bought me a little piece of pottery. That's a one of a kind.
Yeah.
No one else in the world has it.
That's
what original means.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
The art of home.
The art of home.
Yes.
Well, you know, that covers a lot, though.
It's true.
Holy cow. You can go into furnishings.
Well, yes.
Window coverings and everything.
And some furniture chairs are artworks.
Yes.
Me.
Yeah.
Charles Eames. But one day. old maps. There's so many things, right? And it's just about, you know, even in caves, they had drawings.
Yeah. So. That's right. Art for your walls.
Mm-hmm. And then in Victorian times, I was reading this. This is a local woman. She's a seamstress / blogger, Linda Earlham. So she was talking about in her blog about how in Victorian times people used to like plaster their walls with stuff. You know, it could be like braids from someone's, or, you know, like very random artworks, mementos, you know,
yeah,
mugs and cups and medallions. And it was meant to be a conversation starter.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Because that's where you spent your time, was sitting in your parlor with your company.
Yeah, with your tiny little parlor trying to stay warm because, of course, there was no heat or hydro.
Yeah. And there's no radio or TV.
Yes.
That's what you looked at.
Yeah.
And also, they didn't need a big steel box, did they? Because their whole collection was on their walls.
Yes.
They didn't need storage.
No. No. It was all there. And now, we're more contemporary, cleaner. We don't feel the need to, you know.
Well,
plus we're more educated too, so we don't need as many triggers.
Yeah. Like. Well, we're just different kind of people now, mm-hmm. because we have these little electronic boxes that feed us lots of images, mm-hmm. all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. So why would we need to be surrounded by
exactly.
it? Exactly. And there is something to be said for the clarity that comes from, mm-hmm. a super clean modern space.
Yeah. And your home is a working studio.
Yeah. And you have to be able to be comfortable and, mm-hmm. happy working there. And you have to feel calm there. You can't feel overwhelmed all the time in that space. It's got to be a peaceful space that makes you feel like, oh, I can breathe.
I can get through, you know, like utilitarian, you, mm-hmm. know. So there's ultra modern homes are very utilitarian.
Yeah.
Some say cold. Depends, you know.
Well, it's what makes you comfortable.
Whatever makes you comfortable.
Yeah. Like I've learned, I used to think, because in my bedroom, in, mm-hmm. my old place, I had 18 paintings.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when we moved and I repainted, and of course, you know, like in the place we moved into, in my bedroom there, I filled all the holes. We painted a nice color. I hung one Frances Hatfield,
yes.
in there. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. Because that does it. It, mm-hmm. does it for the space. It's an awesome painting. I love it. It's just one of my favorite pieces in my collection. I don't need any other paintings, yeah. in there. So, yeah.
So, well, that raises the, how do you hang art? Where do you put it and how do you pick? And
okay, well, there's a couple things before we get into this big installation, yeah. part, because that's kind of a big conversation. Mm-hmm. I want to point out that children's art is part of your collection.
Absolutely.
And so one of the things you can do as your children create art for you is you can save the pieces that are meaningful to you in a binder. Like, just, mm-hmm. use those clear sleeves or something that have a 3-hole punch in it and just keep tucking those things away. Eventually you can build something larger, like do a collage with similar media. Like if it's all on paper, you can do a collage. If it's all, you know, 3D stuff, you can do a shadow box, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can build a piece of work, a piece of art with multiple elements of your children's,
yes.
artwork. So hang on to stuff that's important. Just tuck it away. You don't have to stick everything on the wall or the fridge. You can just say, this is awesome, sweetie.
Yes.
Foot, into We're the binder
putting
goes.
Putting it in a special binder. Yeah.
Yeah. And it will be meaningful to you. And maybe it'll only last 20 years. But it's an important 20, mm-hmm. years, right?
Yes.
You want to make sure you're remembering some of those.
And they love it when you put their stuff up.
Yeah. And so it can still be part of a modern, well-designed, mm-hmm. home to have children's artwork on the wall. Just,
yes.
saying. Okay. So that's out there. and also when you're doing that, composition considerations are number one. So just compose it well so that it's pleasant to look at and you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So along those lines, composing is exactly what you're doing when you're hanging artwork.
Mm-hmm.
You're composing a drawing basically for your wall. So it's got to take as much consideration as if you yourself are sitting down with the brush or with the pencil, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really don't...
It's interpretive. No. Inventive.
Yes.
The level of culture.
Yes.
Hanging your own...
It is.
Yeah.
You're creating your own artwork installation, yeah. by hanging artwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, I'm terrible at that. I think I'm too practical. I'm like, okay, that'll go there, boom, done.
Yeah.
And I should be more thoughtful.
But
then there are so many holes in the walls from places I've tried to put things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So it's I need a whole... refresh.
You need our installation team from the gallery,
yes.
to come into your house.
I need
that
Super
one
Eric.
Guy. Yeah. We were going to, we had
with his handy cart,
yeah,
in tow,
yeah,
and maybe
the
a
trolley.
Cape.
One time he was installing some work. Somebody had asked him to come and help with this massive collection of Japanese prints.
Yes.
And they're beautiful, but they really needed to be composed and hung properly. So after that, we were having this conversation with a friend and she said, oh my gosh, you should start a business doing that. You can call it Well Hung.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was pretty nasty.
Aww.
But it's kind of true. Like there's a skill involved here and you don't, always have it, right? You have to learn it. You just have to, you have to follow the steps design, and be patient.
It's all about design and balance and ratio and proportion and whether there's tension in between the pieces.
And it's the content too, yes. Right? You can't mix necessarily like a black and white photograph behind glass with a little canvas painting, right? Like there's lots of things you have to consider as a viewer. Like this is how we do it in the gallery. As a viewer, we want everybody to experience the space and the exhibition in the smoothest way possible so that what they're experiencing is the image, not the changing images or the framing differences or the, you know, the massive color differences. Like we want them to hear the or see the story rather than the differences between one piece to the next.
Yes.
So we're very considerate about making sure glassed in pieces are together. Things that have a frame are together. Things without a frame are together.
Yes.
Things that are raw on canvas are together, right? So that you've got this smooth transition.
It's like one of these things.
Yeah.
It's not like the other. See? Sesame Street.
Yeah. And color color changes because some people end up buying a whole, like their whole collection is in a certain palette just because they love that. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I love purple. You're just going to buy everything purple. I don't know.
Because it matches your couch. We tease about that. But you know what? If it makes you happy,
but
if purple
it
makes
happens,
you happy, that's fine.
Exactly. And if it happens that you love purple, you've probably got a purple couch and then therefore you're attracted to purple paintings or purple artwork. So whatever. Anyway, whatever the scheme, it's unlikely that you're going to end up with all works that will work together.
Yes.
So you have to be considerate of this. So in order to do all of that, you first have to lay out all of your artwork on the floor.
Yes.
Do it on the floor. There's no holes. You don't have to put any holes on the floor. So.
Or the bed. Could you lay it on a bed?
It's better on the floor.
Is it better on the floor?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's just cleaner and different, right? It's just a flat surface and you don't have a quilt or cat jumping up on it or your kids or whatever. So, you have to pick your wall first.
Okay.
It's important if you've got any works on paper.
Yes.
Not to choose a wall that will get direct sunlight.
Okay.
Critically important.
And if they're not framed?
If they're on canvas.
On canvas?
And not framed. Like if it's, and most artists nowadays use a UV protectant varnish.
Okay.
So you're good for the most part. I wouldn't put anything in direct sunlight just because.
Okay.
But the works on paper are the most susceptible. Canvas is less susceptible.
Okay. If they're on paper, they need to be under glass.
They really should be under glass.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
Because houses, again, dusty. Our studios, there's dust and grease and, you know, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Wind, sun.
Yeah. Oils are in the air.
Oil. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know
and
that
then
sounds
oils
gross,
stick
but it's true.
To things. You're, and then oils attract dust.
Especially in this open concept world that we live in, everybody wants, has open concept.
Mm-hmm.
It also means that, you know, if you burn toast or oil splatters, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So it does, it helps to keep the work long term
if
you have it behind glass. And then a good varnish on a canvas, on a, you know, on a raw canvas, allows you to clean it. You just, you know, you can be, you have to be very gentle and it, you can't just take soap and water, right? But you can still, you can clean it. Whereas paper, you can't really clean. So, but you can clean glass.
Yes.
So, yeah, keeping all that in mind. And then group things together that are meaningful as a story.
Yes.
That's the next thing. So as you're laying out your works on the floor that's not going onto a sunlit wall, think about, what am I trying to say with this particular grouping?
Mm-hmm.
My mom has a little collection of birds. She has four or five little bird paintings. So we created this little collection and we sorted it out so that it made this composition of all her little bird paintings and we put it on this one wall. So it's, you know, a larger one and then two smaller ones beside and then another one that's kind of long beside, right? Like it kind of, you just compose it.
But
it
works.
Try it out.
And the eye follows.
Yeah.
Nicely through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a little, it's almost like creating miniature salon style installations.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So that's something you can do with small works.
I have, when I went to Cuba, the women at the resort were selling little wee tiny Che Guevara paint, you know, that classic image of,
yep.
But they were so, there was orange and green and blue and red and they're all the same and they just put them on this fabric. I don't even know what it was in these little frames of wood.
Oh.
It kind of just from the scraps of who knows what, right?
Yeah.
But the colors were fantastic.
Wow.
So every day I would go and buy a different color. And then I finally said to her in my limited Spanish, can you bring me like 7 more. And she looking at me like, really? You sure? I'm like, yeah, like that color. And I'm pointing at things like a green one and a blue one. Anyway, now I have this little set of 9. It's kind of my, I don't know, I guess a nod to, what's his noodle factory? 15 Minutes of Fame.
What? Andy Warhol?
Yes. Right. Oh, 'cause yeah, they're all, the same.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But they all have a different.
Nice.
And it's so fun. And every time I walk by, it makes me happy.
Oh, you know? That's so perfect.
Yeah.
If it makes you happy, yeah, that's all that matters.
And it was probably some sort of stencil that everybody has, because this image of him is absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
That sounds really cool.
But you just,
where
like
is that in your house?
Oh, it's in the little hallway on the way out to the back door.
Ugh.
Yeah.
You have a lot of art. So
I know, years. I know. That's what I need to start.
And also, every
over.
Time there's a party at your house, there's so many people to talk to. I
never
get to look
time.
At the art. Not enough time.
See, now I want to go home and like take everything down, paint the whole house white, and start again.
Oh.
Maybe that'll be my weekend. Will you help me if I...
Sure.
Okay, cool.
I would absolutely help
That'd
you.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be so much fun.
Well, it kind of is. I like that part of things. I like starting fresh and figuring out what goes together.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Is it hard to do it as an artist? Like, do you look at your stuff more critically and think, oh, I'm not going to put that up?
I do. I actually, because, well, partly is moving into a new house, right?
Yes.
And you don't want to put up your old stuff.
No.
So it's like, I did that 8 years ago. I don't even like that anymore. It's so
like an old,
old
outfit,
me.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not wearing that.
So I have a few paintings that are just in my studio kind of facing the wall that I'm not willing to put up anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's just my personal thing. But that said, something that I bought 8 years ago from somebody else is still fabulous, right? Because I fell in love with it. So that's why it came into my collection. So
yeah.
I'm
really
happy.
Do fall in love with, I think.
Yeah.
And it's for everyone. Like you know, Dave might not strike you as a typical art collector, but he has, you know, he's gotten into it. He sees things and we buy them.
Yeah.
And he picks them and he decides how much he's willing to pay, you know, and he asks for the story, and it, you know, and it's usually related to his life, like downhill skiing or something outdoorsy or bright colors, or
it's your story.
Yeah. And he loves it. I mean, the first piece he bought was your Larch Hills cabin.
Yeah.
He just, because it had snow and skiing, and he was like, oh, I like that. And I said, well, then why don't you buy it? And he's like, you can do that? Because a lot of people don't realize you can actually buy art hanging in a gallery.
Yeah.
Depending on the kind of gallery.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just this idea of how to buy a piece and like what does that mean to buy a piece? Like, I don't know what I'm doing, right? People sometimes think they don't know how to buy because they don't know how to invest in art. They don't know how to make the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're saying is it doesn't have to be the right investment decision. If you love it and it's part of your story, then you should just go down that road.
I sort of feel like I know the pieces that I love the most, they told me.
Yeah.
You need to take me home.
Yes.
You
take
me
home.
Take me home.
All right.
And so maybe we come back, we can talk about that, the Board Presents show we did.
Yes.
Which talks a lot about personal collections.
Yes, absolutely.
Technical.
It is.
Very technical, and you need tools.
Yeah. You need a really good level.
You should see me hanging here. Sometimes I'm like, I know there's a nail here somewhere. And then I can't find a hammer, so I take the end of a screwdriver.
Oh my God.
And I don't have a level, and I'm terrible. I know, I can't believe I work in design. So I don't have a level, so I'm just looking at it like, ah, it looks pretty good
to
me.
That looks pretty good.
I think maybe the window's crooked.
It's true. Sometimes it's something like our piano
was... It's like a Monty Python.
It is, it is.
Our piano
was on a slopey floor in our old place, and so the painting above it had to be crooked in order to look right,
because
otherwise it looked crooked.
I know. And there's nothing worse than a crooked painting,
crooked,
right?
Crooked paintings drive me crazy. I want to go behind counters in businesses and stuff to go and straighten their things. It makes me nuts.
And that's a human instinct, is to make the world straight.
Level.
It's true.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I'm crazy for
right?
it. Like,
just
I
like
honestly, I'll go and...
Running away from a grizzly bear. It's the same kind of like, oh my gosh, I have to get away. This needs to stop.
That's exactly. I feel the same as running away from a grizzly bear when I see something crooked.
Get me out of here.
Oh my God. Except I don't want to run and fix the grizzly bear.
Yeah. Fight or flight.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So speaking of that.
Yes.
It's a really good idea to use two nails.
Okay.
Or two screws.
Okay.
To install your work.
Okay.
So now what can happen is you can hang canvases directly on their wooden frame, right? On the back, you can see that it's
On that. It's pulled right over the back there. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
So use the wooden frame. Don't use wires and weird hooky things.
Okay.
It just adds nonsense. You really want that canvas to sit flush to the wall.
Yes.
A nice clean edge, nice and straight. And so using two nails or two screws on, well, that are perfectly level, you could just set it on, done,
mm-hmm.
right? It's done. It won't move around. The train going by your house won't change the, you know, where that sits.
Right.
Okay. When you're using something that has to have a wire, like usually frames that have glass and everything, and if you have any control over this, try to get the ones that have a flat wire holder.
Yeah, so they don't have the bumpy outy things.
Right.
Yes.
Because you want it to sit as flat to the wall as you want, as you can. So the hardware should really be flat to the surface and not stick out, like those eye hooks that stick straight out.
Oh, that's what they are, eye hooks.
Oh, they're terrible.
Yeah, I'm anti-eye hook.
Yes. So no, say no to eye hooks.
Okay, say no to eye hooks. Yeah.
And then the same thing with wires. You can use two nails. It'll stay much more stable and level over time with two nails. So your wire isn't going over just one nail.
Oh, okay.
It goes over two nails.
All right.
Yeah, but your nails...
The errors are adding up at my house.
Well, I know this because we live in a community that has coal trains going by every day.
Yes.
So we make decisions based on how much our house shakes.
Well, I'm like, I wouldn't put a glass painting above my bed because of the train.
Yeah.
Because if it fell on my head, that wouldn't be very fun.
Not fun. No.
So it's a canvas.
Yes.
And if it falls, oh well.
Yeah.
No harm will.
Yeah. And two screws or two nails helps the stability of that too. It's less likely to jostle off a wall during an earthquake and stuff too, right? Okay. So, and then the other thing too is there is that lovely magical stuff called sticky tack.
Ooh.
Or it's called Insta Tack or something like that, whatever. Some weird gummy thing that you can get. Try to get white, not blue, because blue actually will lose its color and it's kind of an oily substance, so it will transfer
to your piece. Okay.
Yeah. So get a white tiny tiny little ball of this stuff on each lower corner of your piece
to
secure it in. You're good.
So smart.
Yeah,
that way if you bump it or
so, and yes, have yourself a little toolkit ready.
All I can say, not to say elbow. Sorry. Okay, go. Moving on now.
Moving on. We're dating ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so the height of the works.
Yes.
This is a critical part.
Okay, yeah, this part blew me away. Tell me, first tell us about the stick at the gallery.
Oh, okay.
So I always show people who think it's like not a big deal where you put the paintings. I'm like, really? Because we have a stick.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought the stick was so popular.
It is popular.
Okay. Well, we've got a stick.
Yes.
It's got a mark at 56 inches.
Yes.
So 56 inches from the floor.
Yes.
That is considered eye level.
Eye level.
It didn't always represent eye level. Gallery height used to be 54 inches because we were shorter.
Really?
Years ago. Yeah. But now it's 56 inches. And in some galleries...
Who got to make that call?
I don't know. But that
gallery stick people.
Yeah, I guess.
No, it's a fundamental tool of the trade.
It is. It's required.
Yes.
You need a stick. I think that if you're going to hang a lot of work, you should make a stick.
Mm-hmm.
Make a stick 56 inches.
56 inches. Because most people do what? Hang it too high.
They hang too high. It's very standard. And so you shouldn't really make your visitors crank their neck to see your artwork.
And
right?
It's probably because you don't want anybody to touch it or something. I don't know what the instinct is.
I'm not sure. Maybe it is. It feels like it's safe when it's high up, but it's not.
You know, like that's where you put the vases and the fancy dishes that only get used once a year, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of the weird feeling of art is something you don't really touch or, you know, because it's so precious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it should be down in your living space.
Yeah. And that's why the gallery experience is so different than the home experience. So people don't think of their homes as galleries. But if you use the gallery rules in your home, then you achieve that effect.
Exactly.
So, right?
And it's a much more enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
So the reason that...
56.
So the reason you want a 56
inches.
Inch... Yeah, 56 inches from the floor to the center of your piece. So this is if you're having a single piece, like if it's single painting, hang your painting so that the middle of the painting is 56 inches off the floor. So there's a little bit of math involved if you're going to, you know, fuss with this, but the stick makes it easier for us just to kind of keep going around and centering.
Yeah.
One little measuring tape, we're good to go. There's also a couple little hanging tools that are kind of easy that have levels built right in, and a little pokey thing with that pushes little a little hole into your wall. Yeah. To, you know, there's things you can use like that
and
to make it
sometimes
easier,
like when I think about the bicycle show, and Otto did that whole big thousand, like literally mm-hmm. 1,000 different bicycles he sketched
yeah.
on that one long roll of paper.
Yeah.
So that you used a magnet system.
We did.
Right? It's because some pieces you don't want to stick a pinhole in them.
That's right. If you don't want to put a hole in it and you don't want to frame it, like if it's not frameable, then you can just put mount them with magnets. So you put a
string or...
Yeah, yeah, or we did the bulldog clips and wire for the postcard show.
Yes.
Right? And we just clipped everything on. Mm-hmm. So if you have lots of little tiny pieces, you can do that.
Yeah, airport wire.
Yeah.
Is that aircraft wire? What's it called?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's
we just call it framing wire. But
it's very cost effective, mm-hmm. widely available,
yeah.
and great to display things.
Yeah, and the magnet thing is super easy because you just put screws in the walls where you... on the four corners where you want the piece to hold down. And then you use very small little rare earth magnets, like really super yes. tiny, that you can hardly see them.
Super tiny, and they're super strong.
Yeah.
So don't leave them close to little people.
Yeah, you know, don't yeah. let them eat them and stuff.
Those ones you can put up high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, no, you just don't do that if you have kids.
No.
You just don't put up that kind of artwork. Yeah. But, and you can, I mean, there's other ways of doing it that's not fussy, but those are kind of works that are temporarily installed anyway, mm-hmm. right? Like, you don't necessarily want to have that as your 20-year...
And it's not forever. Like, you can switch things out.
Yeah.
You should switch things
you
out.
You should. Yeah. Okay, before we get to how to circulate your yes. collection within your home, I just want to point out that when we did the children's exhibition,
yes.
we hung that whole show to 52-inch centers.
Because they were little.
Because the kids. Aww,
that's right.
Yeah, it's more their eye level.
A long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. I remember adults coming in going, is this lower? Like they were just, they couldn't quite put their finger on. Like
it's our caveman. Something is different yeah. from the last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But the kids loved it.
Oh, of course they did. Because that was a great show.
It was a great show. Aww. Their little paintings, their little works were all at that's their right. level. It yes. was so nice.
They did so many things, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did bunches and
yeah,
paint. I still, mache. I have one of those in my house.
Yeah.
From that show.
Yeah. Because they were precious and we framed
absolutely
them.
Absolutely precious. Yeah. Yeah.
It was an awesome show. If you're doing a cluster of works, you do the same thing. You hang it to a 56-inch center. So once you've laid it out on your floor and you get this whole thing, measure it out, take a picture of it, see what you know you got going on, figure out where the center of that cluster of, mm-hmm. of works is, and then pick that piece to hang first.
Yes.
And kind of work your way out from the center.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And, you know, and it doesn't, even if it's not original artwork, right? But these rules also apply to putting pictures of your children mm-hmm. or pictures of your family or pictures of your trips yeah. or
which are also lovely when they're grouped together yes, in a yes, composition
yes. yeah
yeah
so you see all that in House and Garden magazines but it's totally doable
it's it is.
Just a skill set and a discipline that you have to right
mm-hmm. yep for yeah. sure so okay and then so what were we what was the next thing before because we talked about
we were going to talk about switching out.
Oh, right. Switching yeah. out. And then we'll talk about the board presents because okay. that was awesome.
Yeah.
So if you have more work than you have nails in your walls,
yes.
then think about artwork as a seasonal thing. Mm-hmm. So only twice a year, though, not like every four seasons. But if you have works that are make you happy in the wintertime, that are, you know, like if you're the kind of person that likes to look at tropical images in the winter, think about, you know, putting up work in the same size frame right. and everything in a certain spot.
Yes.
And sort of plan your cycle with that. So, okay, this is a certain size and this is a certain size. They're really different from each other. I wouldn't want to hang them together, but I could hang them on the same nail if I cycle them out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Same size, same size. Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah. yeah. Okay.
Whereas on, you know, if you're more interested in cool colors in the winter and hot colors in the summer, you know, just figure that out. But mm-hmm. in your clusters, try to like, if you have, say, a whole bunch of works that are 6x6,
yes,
you know, like try a row of four of them mm-hmm. and then just
switch them out.
Yeah. Switch them out whenever you feel like
it. So you don't
like
have to rehang the whole show every time you switch your art.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's talk about the board presents.
Oh, well, that was kind of an exercise in switching out.
Yeah.
We did this show called The Board Presents mm-hmm. when I was on the board. I don't know, like 8 years ago?
Must have been 8, 10 years
ago. And there was some mix-up or misfortune and someone couldn't
yeah
an exhibition fell through
yeah
So Tracy said, well, you guys have lots of art. And it's true.
Because it was really close. It was like 3 weeks out before this show. It was a disaster.
Of course, board members of art galleries typically have a small collection. Mm-hmm. So everyone started bringing in their pieces.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal.
What we had. I couldn't believe how many classic.
So it was like a collection of collections.
Works.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And we had, Gary Lomax was on our board at that time. He had a William Kurelek that he showed. We were like, what?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
First time a Kurelek's ever shown in that
gallery.
Wow. And the piece that Yosha Albright brought
in. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So when she was 17 years old, a Dutch painter painted a portrait of her. And we got to see that. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And total then, master.
Beautiful. And then the best part was the little stories that went.
Yeah.
You know, we lived in such and such a place. Or
mm-hmm.
I bought this when, you know, I had 2 cents to my name, but I love it. And,
yeah.
I, you know, whatever. I mean.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. There's something about having a glimpse into a person's art collection mm-hmm. to really kind of give you a sense of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And their history.
So it was about the art, but it was also about the people and why the people bought. I mean, I thought that show said more about the joy that art brings, right? Because all of those stories were about this piece, this thing that I've had in my house for however long, in some cases decades, has brought me so much joy. And it was so nice to be able to share that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll bet you lots of people would love to have the opportunity to share it. Unfortunately, we can't have shows like that very often.
No.
Because it's, I mean, otherwise we could just fill the gallery with other people's art
totally.
All the time, right?
Shows of show collection. Well, yeah. I still, maybe one day we'll, you guys will, we, you, I don't know what to call it anymore. We could have that collection show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a someday thing. Every time we sort of talk about it, there's like 25 people that want to be part of it.
Yes.
It makes it really hard to say, oh, okay, now only you and you.
Yeah. Because that's really about joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also, I mean, we have a mandate, right? And there's always kind of a slight shifting, changing mandate going on as we work towards a certain kind of idea mm-hmm. in contemporary art. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to fit those kinds of ideas into the mandate.
Yes.
So we have to be careful, especially with funding agencies telling us what we need to do.
But it would be so fun.
It would be so nice. Well, that's why we need another gallery space. Let's put a second story on the gallery.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we'll go.
We do
we'll
need
get
more
there.
Space. You're right.
We do.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well.
Speaking of things that bring you joy.
I love how this particular item that you've chosen is so dramatic.
It's so dramatic.
Because just when you think there's nothing else to be designed in the world.
The designs have been done.
Yeah.
There's nothing left to design.
Nothing left. No new ideas.
Yeah. So that brings me joy. But also what I love is a nice cup of tea in my nicely curated home/art
Absolutely.
Gallery. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we found online that now there's a whole new movement in tea bags and that they are designed as works of art.
Yes.
So imagine you boil the water and you're making a pot of tea and in goes a tea bag that looks like a goldfish. Or a hummingbird.
Yeah. I think the fish is more appropriate.
Right?
Going into your tea. But
yeah, hummingbirds don't go in the water. Or a dolphin, and it's like a blue tea. It's on Board Panda. It's really adorable. Then they have tea bags that are in the shape of umbrellas. And my favorite is a tea bag that is in the shape of a little hanger. And then the tea box is like a little closet.
Yeah,
and you just hang all the tea bags. It's so fun.
Yeah. And there's a tree one, too, that looks like a little forest. When you open the box, it's a forest.
A forest of trees.
Yeah. And then...
Or the paper boats that you can... Oh,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah. Little tea bags hanging off the bottom of a paper boat.
What a great job that would be.
Yeah. But my favorite is...
And they also have tea charms that you can hang on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like wine charms, except for
tea.
Right,
right. So everybody knows their tea.
Yes.
So now, that really awesome one, though, of William and Kate.
Oh, it's so... Yeah, so then they... And the Queen had her 90th birthday. I don't know. And she's very royal, right?
She's very royal.
She's kind of like really, really royal. Anyway, they drink a lot of tea over there.
Apparently.
And so there's a line of tea bags, and it features the royals sort of with their arms stretched out as if they were sitting in a hot tub. And then the tea bag goes in the water. So it's like Her Madge in a hot tub tea bag. a hot tub teacup.
Oh my gosh.
And William and Kate, yeah. and they're all like, woohoo, hang in the hot tub.
In their full royal uniforms.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Not
of course.
Not inappropriately.
Appropriately.
Yes, yes.
She has her crown and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because I wear my crown in the hot tub. Yeah. I don't know about you.
Exactly. Anyway, so but that's all in good natured fun. You know, there's little Polaroid photo tea bags. There's handmade lace ones. You know, people are so inventive and creative and fun.
Talk about having conversation starters, yes. right? Like when you serve tea and it's got, yeah. you know, it's Prince William in the sitting in the hot tub.
Yeah, and I really think this creativity comes from a place of... you know, you're in a good environment where there's room for ideas, right? And mm-hmm. That's why, you know, curating, designing, building a home, you know, that's welcoming and open and full of books and ideas, that's all important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we've produced some pretty super talented artists in our own right.
There has been some yes. pretty great talent
and we
come
continue
out of
to mm-hmm. produce. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is another dramatic moment mm-hmm. of the day is that our very own Chris Cran is exhibiting right now at the National Gallery of Canada.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. His exhibition is called Sincerely Yours, mm-hmm. and it is a collection of his contemporary works and some historic works from, you know, his own historic works, and runs May to September of this year. So all summer long, you can just zip over to Ottawa, check it out.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are going.
A lot of people from Salmoner aren't going. A lot of his friends and relatives are going.
Oh,
and
it's a huge deal. That's like the Carnegie Hall moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
And he's a contemporary of many of our artists that we love and collect still today.
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
right.
Yeah.
So we've got, I mean, we're very fortunate, Harold Nix and Steve Menny in our community, that the three of them all were buddies and hung out and sort of started their careers together. And everybody's kind of gone in slightly different directions. And Chris just went to the moon. He just skyrocketed.
Yeah.
You know, part of that is kind of the...
Well, he comes back.
Well, he...
remembers us.
I think he does.
Yes.
I've seen him a couple of times. And in fact, the last time I saw him...
that was a leading question.
Yeah, thank you, Louise, for that. I'm so scared to talk about this, though, just in case I jinx it. But the last time I talked with him, I said, you know, we are your community gallery.
Yes.
You really should have a show here. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then, but of course, you know, this has been... getting ready for a National Gallery exhibition is, you know, years in the making.
I can't
right?
imagine.
So he did say, well, you know, I'm getting ready for a big show in 2016. Yeah. So I contacted him again recently and said, well, our big year is Canada 150, 2017. And this is what we're planning. So I kind of explained what our exhibition program was going to look like and kind of what kind of stories we're going to tell and kind of how we're going, you know, national and then community and then international and then, right. And so mm-hmm. we're kind of back and forth. So I said, look at how well you fit into this. And he agreed.
Oh, so well, that's exciting.
It is exciting. So while there's not necessarily ink to paper yet, we tentatively have him showing in our gallery in September 2017.
Wow.
I know. Could be exciting times. Well, it will be anyway, no matter what.
And, you know, last year, Cardiff Miller, next year, Chris Cran. Mm-hmm. I mean, this speaks to the importance of that place, mm-hmm. you know? And to a community that says, yeah, sure, you're a big shop, but you're still one of ours, so don't yes. forget about us. And that this is true in music, Shuffle Demons. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think quickly, you know, music authors, artists. As I say, I think if we surveyed, we'd find that we have a slightly higher percentage of the inventive type
yeah.
of cultural participation.
Yeah, there's something
Potters,
about the shoe swap.
Yeah. We curators, painters, mm-hmm. yeah.
We have a lot of talent here, and mm-hmm. we kind of, I mean, I guess we know it, we feel it. People who are outside the art sector even know it. They say weird words like, you know, we're very arty here.
Yes.
Because they know there's lots of music, there's lots of, mm-hmm. you know, there's public art, there's community art events, like they feel it. People know there's something very mm-hmm. inspirational about
and it's
being
not
here.
Just about seeing other arts, it's about having artists in your community, right?
Yeah.
That's the piece I think we have that maybe we need to measure because we didn't know that was the case. There are relatively more artists in the Shuswap mm-hmm. than in other areas.
Yeah. Well, when we had
would be my my thesis.
Yes. Well, we have actual numbers based on a beautiful British Columbia magazine journalist who came to the Shoe Swap to do a piece about the Shoe Swap artists and told me at the end. So she came and met with me at the beginning of her little 4-day event. Oh, years ago now. So it was like, oh, I don't know, maybe like sometime between 2005, 2008.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're talking probably 10 years ago. So this is, and I'm sure it's bigger now. So she came and talked to me at the beginning. Then 4 or 5 days later, after she'd done this whole survey and traveled around and visited lots of little studios and galleries and arts groups, that when she came back, she said she had a pretty good tally on the number of artists in the Shoe Swap. And she figured it was about 300 visual artists at that time.
Wow.
That's pretty good, mm-hmm. I think. So I'm thinking now, I mean, just knowing just in the last 10 years, how many visual artists have moved to our community, mm-hmm. and we haven't lost very many. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that number will be higher now.
It would be great to know that, mm-hmm. because it is a competitive advantage, right?
Yeah. And musicians, I mean, we have so many talented musicians here. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how you could start to count it because of all the different genres. But same thing as painters or, you know, visual artists. There's some painters or some potters. You just don't know. They're everywhere. Sometimes they're visible and sometimes they're not.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't even know they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they quietly work elsewhere, but.
Yeah. So in a way it makes it easier, like going right back to our original topic.
I want to put them
here.
All on display in the Shoe Swap. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. And I think that's what we try to do with our artist directory on our website.
Yes.
But of course, not everybody wants to be contacted.
No,
so we
can't
get an inventory on our website. But I'd love to be able to somehow pull together an inventory of all of our amazing mm-hmm. artists. But that comes back to the beginning premise here about how to build your art collection and to get to know your emerging artists. You have to work at it. Mm-hmm. You have to do your research. You have to, you know, use your feet, visit lots of places, go to community events and meet them. That's really the best way because they're not necessarily all on Google.
No, and artists like to be met, don't they? Do you like it when people say, I love your work?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like it when people say, oh, I bought a piece from you about like 6 or 8 years ago. And, you know, now I've moved into a different place and I need a piece that's like about this size. What do you got? I just love that.
Nice.
Because it means that they've enjoyed it for that many years.
And they want
something else. Right?
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Aw.
I feel like I've got collectors.
You do?
Yeah.
You have a following.
Yeah, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've had some people that have bought like 8 or 10 paintings from me.
I've certainly earned it. I'm one of your followers.
Yeah, you're awesome. So that's, the whole building your relationships thing with your local artists. Absolutely. Call them up. If you know somebody whose work you like, mm-hmm. phone their studio.
Yes.
And say, I'd like to come see your work, or where can I see your work?
Yeah.
Artists like that.
Yeah, you have to be active on that front.
Yeah. And be a little
And when
brave.
They get really big, you have to go through an agent. But until they're big, you can just go directly.
Yes.
And when you go directly, you don't pay for the agent. That's the other thing.
That's
the
true.
The closer you get to the source, the better the value.
Yeah, it's true.
And I don't mean cheaper. I just mean everybody in the chain gets better value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you don't necessarily, like there's payment plans that some artists will do. You don't have to write a check right then and there. You can say, look, I really like that piece that's was in the thing. I can't do it right now. Can I arrange this kind of payment plan? I would bet you
all
like 99 out of 100 mm-hmm. artists would say absolutely mm-hmm. because they want their piece to find a good home.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, well, I don't do that. Like, mm-hmm. What am I, a bank? They're just not going to. They're all about relationships. Mm-hmm. So ask. Mm-hmm. That's all you have to do.
And if you don't ask, you don't know. And no is an okay answer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some artists, like I have a policy now because I've had that question a few times. So I have a policy. I just do 30% deposit and then we can talk about what the payment looks like over the next, you know, 4 months, but I'll only do a 4 month maximum sort of plan.
Yes.
That's just my policy.
There you
but
go.
But it's something I worked out over years of, you know, mm-hmm. That's how I find it works best. Mm-hmm. And so that's
like doing
it.
Business. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it is a business. Speak business.
Yep.
It's an important one.
Yep.
And it's prettier to hang on your wall than a, you know, stock.
Yeah. Than something that 30,000 other
sort of
people
debenture.
Who
debenture. I don't even know what that means.
Debenture?
Look at my debenture collection.
I think that's a debt document,
yeah,
isn't
something.
It?
Something. I don't know.
Okay. So
a financial instrument. No one ever said, you should come over and look at my financial instrument collection.
That sounds dirty, actually.
Oh, that's funny.
You have to be careful with your words these days, don't you?
I know. Isn't that, yeah.
Okay, so speaking of building relationships with your local artists, a really great way to do that is to check out upcoming arts events on our Participate page.
Yes, yes, yes.
SalmonArmArtsCenter.ca. Click on Participate and you'll get a listing by date of upcoming arts events in the area. Like, I can't even start the conversation on that because there are so many things coming up. I guess because it's coming up to summer and there's just so many tons of festivals and events and concerts and gatherings. It's just better to just go and find the information.
You know who probably has a great art collection?
Who has a great art collection?
Anonymous.
Yes, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you,
Anonymous. Might even have one of your pieces or one of Eric's pieces.
Wow, that would be really wild.
Who's to say?
I can't wait to find out who this is.
I hope there's a big reveal at the end.
I want there to be a reveal. I know. Thank you so much to our Anonymous sponsor.
Appreciate the support.
Yeah. Support for community radio, which is also a form of art. It's about talking and conversation and music and exposing local artists to the world. So. Yes. Yeah, let's just keep it going.
So go out there and look at your walls. Think about how to make them better.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for joining us. See you next time.